listening to Rattle and Pedal, divergent thoughts on marketing and growing professional services firms. Your hosts are Jason Malicki and Jeff McKay.
Jeff, how you doing?
I'm wonderful. And you?
Wonderful. I'll say I'm good. Good. Wonderful is pushing it. So today we agreed we are going to talk about how to adjust your marketing budget to the pandemic, to adjust it for this moment that marketers are experiencing. I'm not exactly sure where to start. I think you suggested that maybe I share some of what we're seeing our clients do, and I think it would be good for you to do the same. So we could certainly start there and talk about the different things that we're seeing play out, and then maybe lean into how you make those choices the right way.
I say we don't cut any marketing.
Ever.
Our podcast where we asked, how much did you spend on marketing? And your response was, more.
Well, you know, that did not account for a, you know, 100-year pandemic. But generally speaking, I would say most firms do radically underinvest. So usually I would say that my answer of more is always right. But in this particular moment, I will be more prudent and pragmatic. But no, that's pretty funny. As you said that, I had this image of the stock market in my head, you know, that kind of belief that the stock market always rises. You know, obviously it has its momentary blips, but it always rises. And so marketing budgets should always rise with momentary blips. That's clearly not the case. So let's talk about this. At least on our side, the obvious thing that I've seen is that there's sort of three scenarios, and they're obvious scenarios, and they're a function, I imagine, of a couple of different things. Obviously, the first, we have clients that have had to pull back on their spend, and so they've made budget cuts, both internally and in external outlays. Usually, that is primarily a function of real revenue cash flow problems at the moment. So this pandemic has obviously, you know, shut down whole sectors of the economy. So there's organizations where their revenue went to zero overnight, and that's trickled its way back up into every company that touches them and works with them. So the firms that I've seen that have pulled back, it's not necessarily been a function of strategic choice or a belief or lack thereof of the effectiveness of what they were doing. It was just a raw revenue cash flow reality, which is that we have less cash coming in the door and we have to adjust all of our expenses accordingly in order to survive the moment. So there's clients in that bucket. We have clients that are sort of in the middle, I would say. They're basically static. So they're just staying the course. They haven't made any significant changes in direction, significant changes in spend. And they may have made some modifications in the things they're doing right now in order to be more responsive to where opportunities are in the moment, but they're not changing the trajectory of what they're doing or why they're doing it or how they're doing it. And then we have a few clients that are actually overinvesting right now. They've found a very real significant marketplace problem that they have a solution for, and they're essentially sort of seizing the moment and saying, well, we can invest more in our marketing right now to go out into the universe and say, hey, we've got a solution to this problem, and here it is. And so there are firms I have seen that have taken that prudent risk, I guess, because they recognize that it's both a horrible time for so many people, but there are also opportunities in the hurricane, as we've said in previous podcasts, and they're seizing on those. So I don't know if that helped at all, but because it's fairly obvious that those are the three scenarios that there are. I just guess I just maybe give listeners the confidence that we are seeing all of them. We have clients at every one of those trajectories. So if you have a tendency or a belief that you need to go one of those three directions, I guess maybe it's okay to go there. It's okay to invest in marketing right now if you think you have an opportunity and you can solve a real problem at the marketplace. Because I do think sometimes people need permission anyway, but go ahead.
Yeah. Well, nobody wants to be the first person to step out of line sometimes, and I get that. I also think in a lot of firms, marketers wait to be told what to do instead of proactively going to the managing partner or the practice leaders and says, I've already created the contingency. Here's the thinking behind it. Here are the results I'm expecting from it. Here are three or four scenarios that could play out. And based on those scenarios, here's kind of the bottom line impact to us. And then here's how we could recover, re-engage once this thing is over, given those scenarios. And I think that's a really useful exercise as well. You know, I would say my clients fall into those three categories as well. I'd be curious, if you laid percentages across those categories, what would they be? What percent of your clients are in category one, two, or three?
Well, obviously, we don't have a ginormous client base because we're an agency, and our whole agency is predicated on the idea that we serve 12 to 15 clients in a very deep strategic way. So honestly, it's probably 70 to 80% are in the middle, just sort of staying the course, maybe making some minor adjustments to their strategies and tactics, but not substantially disrupting their revenue model. And then you've got 10 at either end. So you've got 10% that had to go through a significant change and 10% that are seeing this as a, as I say opportunity. I'm careful saying that word. I don't want people to misunderstand what I'm saying. And what I'm saying is they recognize that they can solve a real significant problem right now that is going to create long-lasting effects. And so they're stepping into that moment. So I don't want it to come off like they're trying to be opportunistically gaining off of other people's suffering. That's not what it's about. So I just wanted to preface that. But yeah, so it's, I guess, 70 in the middle, 10 and 10 or something like that. 15 and 15, I guess. My numbers don't add up. So I am the math guy after all.
Yes, you are. Yes, you are. Mine would be 180 degrees
really
different than yours. Yeah. And I would say the majority of mine, more than the majority, are actually investing because they're in a strong cash position. They have, to some degree, available leadership time to focus on some more strategic things and feel now is the time to position the firm to come out stronger. The ones holding in the middle may be in industries a little more impacted. And, you know, I think they're being smart about keeping their powder dry. And then, you know, the others are, it's just clear, they're just, there's not a strong position to do what they would like to. And I think they're learning quickly why, and they're making adjustments. But for the most part, I think in, people that I talk to in the industry are really, really busy. You know, I was talking to one of the big four partners just a week or two ago. He's putting in, you know, 15, 16 hour days working with clients, helping them get through this. So, you know, they're still generating revenue in major parts of their business. So it's definitely a mix. It's definitely a mix. But I think for me, my clients see it as an opportunity to invest and come out stronger when it's over.
I'm shocked to hear you say that only because, you know, the prudent decision maker that you are, I would imagine you would have pulled back. The thing I've said all along, I mean, there's always that saying, you don't want to waste a recession, right? And this is different than a recession because it's more acute and it's more painful because it's people are dying and it's horrible. But there's substantive research out there that shows that these are sort of the best times to market when everything is not going well and other people are pulling back and you can lean in a little bit. There's obviously less clutter for mindshare. Now, there's a lot of clutter for COVID-related thought leadership at the moment. So I don't know that that's really a true statement in terms of, you know, the sort of ability to self-publish. But, and I also think that there's more attention. So the thing that people keep saying to me as well, you know, people are busy, they're helping homeschool their children and they're caring about for their loved ones and they're making meals and all these things that are getting in their way. And they'll say they don't have their attention for commercial activity. And we've just found the entirely opposite, that we have people's full attention more so than we've maybe ever had it. Now, getting from attention to a sale is a lot harder. Getting people to part with their money might be more difficult than it was 60 days ago, but getting their attention is not the case. And the thing I've said all along is that if you can be helpful in this moment as a marketer of a professional services firm, if you're helping your clients work through this crisis, prepare themselves for the recovery as a marketer, even if you're not getting rewarded with new work or new client relationships or new projects from that effort, you will absolutely get tremendous goodwill and separation on the other side. You'll be remembered for the actions you took to create value and help people right now, even if you don't know who they are. I mean, I know, as you know from us, I mean, we're doing a lot. I mean, we've got now, we have our third webinar coming up this Friday. I've co-authored an article with Bob. You and I did a podcast. We've done a lot of things to step in and just give, I guess, my and our best advice on what to do in this moment on every level. And we're getting more interest in readers and on all those things than we did a month ago. But I just think it's because we're just trying to help. And I'm confident we'll be rewarded in the long term for that effort. And we're getting lots of new people in the system that I wasn't familiar with, right? You know, you look across the mm-hmm. funnel and some of the people that are showing up to webinars or are signing up for our newsletter are just firms and people wasn't familiar with prior. So those are all good things. Whether they hire us now, hire us in the future, does it matter? You know, eventually all that will come back in some form. I don't know. That was a random comment. I'm way off base. Sorry. Or off course.
I didn't think it was off base at all. Yeah. In the blog post I shared a couple of weeks ago, you know, it really does come down to crises really bring out our real personalities, and being helpful is part of your personality. So I'm not surprised to hear that. And, you know, ask yourself, how do you want to be remembered? What reputation you want your firm to have when this thing's over? And it's going to be over. I feel like we are very close to tipping into getting back to work. And who knows, this conversation may be moot to a large degree by the time it airs. I don't know. I could be wrong. I could be wrong.
Well, to your point, we should preface something real quick. We are recording this on April 15th, and this probably won't publish until probably late April. So to your point, what the timeliness of this may not entirely be there. I mean, I know last I heard they're anticipating, at least in Ohio, that they expect our peak of infections to be April 19th. To get to the upside from the floor to the peak took, I don't know, 45 days. So to get from the peak to the trough, probably another 45, right? So I can't see this thing like totally releasing before June, as I've said a number of times. And then if you look at the data coming back from China and Japan and Singapore and other places, they are seeing reinfections after they reopen the economy. So I think you will see most states take a slow, methodical approach to reopening things, trying to work from more essential to less essential things. I'm pretty comfortable that when this publishes in late April, that it will still be relevant into the end of May, into June. And then, of course, even at that, though, it doesn't really. And the thing I keep trying to remind people is like, the economy is not a light switch. You know, you don't just flip a switch and turn the thing back on again, right? Like it's, I mean, some of these companies are going to take a very long time to get back on their feet, and it's going to take consumers a while to come back. And every professional services firm and every B2B marketer, whether they like it or not, their success hinges on consumer sentiment. I mean, consumer behavior in this country drives everything. So you need consumers to be comfortable to go back and have a meal in a restaurant, hop on a plane again. And that's not going to happen, again, with a light switch. That's not going to happen. You know, the moment someone says they've opened their restaurant, people aren't just going to come flooding in the door. It's going to take some time. And we actually have some research on that. So we work with the National Center for the Middle Market, and their research partner is RTI Research. And RTI did a study on that. And for most of those behaviors, most consumers, at least in late March, were saying it would be somewhere between 1 to 2 months before they would feel comfortable doing some of those things. You know, things like eating at a restaurant, going to a movie, hopping on a plane, going to a sporting event. So like some of that stuff is going to have a lag from the time it opens to the time people are doing it. And that lag is critical because that is that much longer that consumer spending isn't happening. Hence, that trickles back to whatever your firm is in business to do, right? So whether you're providing advice or audit or whatever, or project work or whatever you're doing, all that stuff hinges on consumers spending money. So that was another sidebar. Sorry. Coming back to center here. All right, get us back on track, Jeff. Usually I'm the one keeping us on track. I am not keeping us on track today.
It's funny as you described this, I saw this. Oh gosh, I don't know what the word of the year will be, if it will be social distancing or flattening the curve. Yeah. As you were describing that, I was very much seeing a bell curve of those of us who are like, I'm jumping right back in. Let's go out to eat. Let's jump on the bike. Get on the train, start having meetings, let's go. My wife, on the other hand, will be on the other tail of that bell curve. So I think that's important to think about as you reevaluate your budget. Maybe we should talk a little bit about how you should do that.
Yeah, no, that's a good transition and a way to get us back on track, by the way, because I definitely was really taking us off the beaten path there. But I do think it's relevant, because the thing I kept saying in the webinars I've been doing is you have to look at these things. You have to look at those bell curves. You have to look at that timing, because it does affect, you know, what you're trying to market to. And it even is relevant for this podcast, right? In the sense of, you know, when do you pivot out of talking about crisis and start talking about recovery? And you have to make sure that you're in tune with the feel of people, executives, and how they're feeling and their realities. And, you know, there's a little bit of a lag between the time you produce something as a marketer and you get it in the market, right? Although everyone's trying to compress that, but it's still a reality. So how do you make these choices? You start. You're the cost cutter amongst us. I'm the guy who just says more, right?
No, I say make smart investments. it's a little hard, and I always hesitate, and anyone who reads my blogs know that I'm not a big fan of benchmarking reports and professional services. You know, the ones that say, you know, high growth firms are spending this percent of revenue on marketing, or, you know, they're doing video, or they're doing whatever the latest fad is. I'm just not a fan of those. And I think they can lead you in the wrong direction. So when it comes to, you know, reducing and reallocating budgets, it's really important that you look inside for the answers, not outside. This is not where you want a herd mentality. You want to be smart about what you're doing.
You're listening to Rattle and Pedal, divergent thoughts on growing your professional services firm. Your hosts are Jason Malicki, principal of Rattleback, the marketing agency for professional services firms, and Jeff McKay, former CMO and founder of strategy consultancy Prudent Pedal. If you find this podcast helpful, please help us by telling a friend and rating us on iTunes. Thank you. Now back to Jason and Jeff.
Is there any place you want a herd mentality, by the way? I've never heard anyone say, you know, this is the moment when you really need a herd mentality.
Well, but the thing is, everybody always goes with the herd.
I know.
So you may not want it. Well, you may not say that you want it, but actually you do want it, because nobody stand out like that. It's risky. It's risky.
Of course, that's why you and I get along well, is because we're on that fringe on these things, right? You know, it's just both of us are kind of trying to reject those things as much as we possibly can. At least consciously we try to, right? Keep going. No, because I agree with you. I agree. I love the way you framed it. I love the way you framed it, saying it's look inward, not outward, which is kind of counter to most marketing thinking, right? Usually you want to be looking outward. When we want to be looking at, well, talk to the customer, talk to the client, see what they need, you know, understand their problems. That's the essence of marketing. And so, but in this case, you're saying, no, you got to look inside. And I think that's great. So keep going down that wicket before I ruin it again with another segue.
Yeah. So, so the reason I say you have to look inside is because even though firms may serve very similar industries, similar geographies, and have basically, you know, the same size to them, their strategic priorities are going to be different. Their cultures are going to be different. Their brand relevances in given areas are going to be different. And their growth prospects in any given mix of their portfolio is going to be different, given, you know, their capabilities that they have and how they're able to execute it, right? That's the thinking behind the thinking. Is firms may look like they're similar on the outside, but they are not on the inside. Are you laughing?
Because the thinking behind the thinking, it's all really sound. I think the interesting thing for some firms is what's going to play out, or what I've seen play out and has played out, is that the revenue model just got completely disrupted, right? You know, firms took a 30% revenue haircut overnight, right? So there's this situation where there's been a significant loss of revenue, a significant loss of cash to fund operations. And so there are probably leaders that are going to come down and lay those types of kind of broad statements on the marketer's shoulders. Well, you know, you built a budget predicated on this amount of money that was 8% of our revenue. And now our revenue is a third of what it was. I need you to cut that down to, you know, this amount of money that's 6% of our new revenue target, or something along those lines. So I totally agree with all your thinking on the benchmarking. Marketers are going to get that type of, or probably already have got that type of request. Mm-hmm. And then I think it's up to the marketer, to your point, because that's an axe. I've described the clients that are at the bottom of that bell curve that are cutting back as sort of taking axes at times to things. They just sort of, you know, we'll just cut off all this, cut off all the independent contractors, protect all the employees. Well, that sounds great on the surface, except if you step back and think about it, you might have some employees that are not as strong as your contractors, and maybe you should be retaining those contractors and looking at how you tighten up those relationships. And maybe there's a few employees that unfortunately do need to be moved along. So there are kind of big rash axe type maneuvers that firm leaders are using. And whereas I would suggest it needs to be a scalpel. And so for the marketer, when that request comes to your desk, you got to really look. In my mind, you got to look really, really hard up and down to every strategy, every tactic, every investment you're making to identify where the highest value opportunities are and where, what you believe are the lowest value in the short term and in the long term, and make decisions based on that horizon of, you know, the things that can help us deliver, you know, solutions we have to real pressing problems right now that can be brought forth in weeks, are areas where our opportunities are, areas where we might have been investing marketing resources against big problems that clients have that have long solutions of years or more, might be things where we want to pull back. Things that we know create a ton of value, thought leadership, probably we want to protect. Things that we are questioning whether they deliver value, you'll love this, brochures, updating that PowerPoint template, I don't know, whatever else falls into that list of maybe low perceived value activities are probably the things you want to look at cutting. So I guess my just general advice on if that mandate's coming down and you have to deal with it is, you know, even if the leader used an axe, then you as the marketer need to use a scalpel, and you need to get really narrow and say, where is the greatest value inside of our marketing investments? Where is the least value? And let's make decisions that way and try to avoid those sort of rash decisions that people tend to make. And again, it's not popular, but I'll reuse that one. I say it's not popular because your instinct is to protect your own, to protect your employee base. It makes total sense. And that's what every business owner and executive, their first instinct is to do. But sometimes you have to step back and go, well, time out. Who's delivering the most value here? And those are the people that are going to be the critical resources that are going to get you through the crisis and up the recovery. So if you cut the most valuable resources, whether they're inside or out, that's going to do some damage. And so those are things that you got to be thinking about. I don't know if that helped or not.
Well, you jumped into, I think, one of the most critical areas when we're talking about marketing budgets. I don't think I've ever been in a firm, maybe some of the larger firms, largest firms, this would be different, but most small, mid-size firms, and I would say this is, you know, it's true of, you know, the software and other types of services firms that I deal with. When you look at marketing, I would say close to 50 to 75% of marketing spend, and every firm has a different general ledger and how they classify marketing spend, which is one of the reasons I don't like benchmarking reports. It's all people costs. It's all people costs. Yeah. And the actual spend on programs is de minimis. Because you're selling an intangible, most of it's thought leadership, most of it's digital. When you have to cut deeply on cost, you're going to be cutting people. And that's when the hard decisions get made or have to be made, and they're very emotional. But I also think it's important going in that you understand where you're going from a strategic standpoint and what it's going to take to get there. And I talk about this in building the optimal marketing organization in terms of marketing capabilities and roles. But firms, and all firms do this, they use these types of crises to get rid of people they don't like. They just say, we're eliminating your role. That affords them the opportunity to not really have to manage or deal with difficult people. They just cut them because they're, you know, it's cost cutting, which to me is just so lame. And that's probably another podcast in and of itself. But the point is, you really have to think through the people, where you are and where you're trying to get to and what skill sets you're going to need. And your comment about employees versus contractors is very critical. What's going to complicate that, particularly for those firms with less than 500 people, is the PPP program from the government that's subsidizing the shutdown if you don't get rid of people, that you keep them on the payroll. So that's going to complicate some of the back end decision making for people. And you have to be aware of that. But the first place you're going to have to cut is going to have to be people, because that's where all the money is. The second thing, unless you want to,
In fact, I think this is going to be the wrap. So the things that you lay out are going to be the closing comments. So I want to hear you kind of go through this progression of things, because that'll be where we'll end.
Well, some decisions are going to be made for you. You're going to have a managing partner says, cut this amount, bam, you know, give me one head, give me two heads, whatever the case may be. If you have significant industry events where you've invested big dollars, chances are that event is not happening this year. that decision has been made for you. But the rest of it is where you're going to have to make hard decisions. Because we're time short, I'm going to put a link in the show notes about a model that I use for evaluating program areas. And I group them into four, and you can go read the article. But essentially, they look at the cost versus the impact, which to me is rudimentary thinking, but it's important. And I group them into four categories. The first one is what I call prima donnas. They're high cost and they have high impact, high return. You may not want to kill those, but you need to have your team looking for ways to identify efficiencies within them. So don't cut them, because most of these programs take time to come to fruition, but have the team working on efficiencies in saving money. The second one is prodigals. They are low impact, high cost. You may think that's a no-brainer, get rid of it, and it may be. You may just need to modify the approach and change how you're doing it. Now is a time to look at that. But if you need to get rid of something fast, prodigals will be what you want to get rid of.
Prodigals.
Okay. Yes.
Sound like prodigals, like protocols. So prodigals.
Prodigals. Okay. That's my redneck voice. Don't make fun of it.
You live in Chicago.
The third one is gems. Low cost, high impact. Those are the things that you do not want to get rid of. You have to protect those. And to the degree possible, you want to transfer the whatever learning you can to prodigals and prima donnas.
Those are agency partners, right? Your gems?
Yeah.
Keep going.
Could be. And then finally, this is something that should be done crisis or not, is a category I call distractions. They're low cost. They're low impact. They just take your attention off of the things that you should be really working on. But you cannot categorize these unless you're able to quantify the cost and the return. That's the impact. So before
I like the impact cutting better than return. I like that you're calling it impact, not return, just as an aside. I think if you start making it about return and ROI, it gets a little bit fuzzy and weird. And because a lot, you know, it's hard to say necessarily which one has the most ROI. But I think if you say impact, it's a much more conceptual discussion. Is this having a big impact on the trajectory of the firm or not? And that's an easy question to answer. It's a little harder to answer. Well, is there ROI on this? I don't know, right? So I like that you use the word impact.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's a good way of saying it. So I'll put a link in there and you can go a little deeper on that. But I think to wrap it up, marketers need to be leading. And by this time, it's probably too late to lead. So you better respond effectively and lay the groundwork for the next crisis. But you always want to be going to the managing partner and practice leader before they ask you, or at least be prepared for when they do ask you on how you can pivot on these things. Second thing, people are going to be the biggest budget number, and good leaders know who their high performers are and who's adding the most value. And you're going to have to be prepared to let some people go, I suspect. But don't cut too deeply and fight for your people, because I think we're going to come out of this thing much faster and stronger than conventional wisdom. Knock on wood. Third, I'll put this model out there in the show notes, and you can look at your prodigals, your prima donnas, your gems, and your distractions, and rationalize accordingly. But whatever you do, don't go look at a benchmark report. Look inside.
That's a great close. I love the model, so I look forward to reading it. I haven't seen that model of yours, so I'm looking forward to reading it. Thanks for taking the time, and I'll talk to you next week.
Yeah. See you, buddy.
Thank you for listening to Rattle and Pedal, divergent thoughts on marketing and growing professional services firms. Find content related to this episode at rattleandpedal.com. Rattle and Pedal is also available on iTunes and Stitcher.